Yeah. Same procedure as always. We will wait for some more people to join the call. And let me test, can everyone hear me? Test,
Yep.
test. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, then, why don't we get started? I will share my screen for some seconds. And welcome to this ERAM-SIG meeting, which is the last in 2025. So our next meeting will be either on January 7th, depends on whether everyone's back then and whether we have something new. The alternative date, the next date would then be the February 4th. We had no real homework for today, apart from the ERAM development update. Owen will continue the discussion with recording perpetual access details for agreements. And there is a document that has already been started to discuss in the past ERAM-SIG meeting. So we will continue the discussion today. And I think with that, the housekeeping part would be done. Are there any additional thoughts or questions before we get started with the dev update? Okay, so I'm silent now. We stop sharing and hand over to Owen and the dev update.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Martina. So, in terms of the dev update, the we're in sprint 232. The main work that we've been looking at is some backports of issues. I think I might have mentioned this before, but there have been some fixes. There have been some issues with how the modules work. It's especially affected multi-tenant environments, not to do with the functionality, but or not as such, but can sometimes mean that the modules need restarting on the servers, etc., and can be a bit unstable. And those issues have been fixed along with some security issues which had been raised in the current release. And we've done the backports to Sunflower, so they'll be in the next Sunflower CSP, which I believe is out in January. And we're currently working on the backport to Ramzens for those as well. They should be released this week. And we don't have a date, I don't think, for the next Ramzens CSP. But whenever that becomes available, those releases will be in there. So that's been taking up quite a lot of time. We've also had to revisit the work on implementing the acquisition units into agreements. When we got into the testing phase, I've talked about this and shown the functionality already. When we got into the testing phase, we realized that the way that the implementation worked meant that the question about the issue we encountered was that agreement lines were not being handled in the way that we expected. And there's a little bit of subtlety here, but essentially because we decided that you should assign the acquisition units to the agreement, and the agreement lines should then essentially obey those acquisition units on the parent agreement, as it were. Then the way we wanted to treat that was that therefore adding an agreement line or removing agreement line or editing an agreement line, all the three of those things actually count as an edit of the agreement. And what was happening instead was they those act the actions of create and delete of an agreement line were only protected if you had also protected those actions on the agreement. So you would only be able to delete agreement lines from an agreement if you could also delete the agreement completely, because it required you to have delete permission on the agreement. That's not really what we wanted. We wanted the deletion of an agreement line to be dependent on your ability to edit the agreement. Obviously, these are all protected by folio permissions as well. So you don't, you know, it's not that if you can edit an agreement, that all works the same as currently, but the acquisition units layer additional permissions over the top for specific objects. And it was making sure that the additional removal of an agreement line was seen as essentially as the editing of the agreement. So it requires the edit permission on the agreement to be able to create or delete agreement lines. And so we had to revisit the way that was implemented and rework that. That's been quite a lot of effort, and slightly interrupted by some illness of the developer. So it's been a bit slow going, but that change, that update was merged into the code base yesterday, which means that I can now check that it's working on Snapshot today. So that hopefully, as long as that all of those changes haven't introduced any new errors, and it now all works as I expect, as we expect, then we should be all good. I hope we're close to getting that release done now. Sorry, that functionality is signed off now. And then I would like to have some UAT on that. But I guess that it's looking like that will be. Well, I guess I might be able to start that next week, but I guess it's likely that we won't be able to kind of tidy that up until after Christmas. So those are the two things we've been working on. I will just mention, speaking of UAT, any users, anybody on the call who uses the GoKB integration, the UAT for our updated GoKB search integration has been, in theory, finishes today, but we've had no input on that at all. It's been open for 2 weeks. If anybody, I don't mind, obviously, increasing the amount of time that we have available for that, if that means we get some more feedback. It would be great if anybody is on the call who is a GoKB user, then would very much appreciate getting that feedback. Felix asks, can we extend the UAT over Christmas? So there's no, from my point of view, extending the UAT isn't a problem. The challenge is that the current contract of work that we have runs up till Christmas, and that was intended to include kind of finishing off this functionality. Now, if we, I think it's clear we will have contract work after Christmas as well. So it's not that we're just stopping work after Christmas. The question about what we spend that time doing is still up for discussion, I think, with GBV. So, as long as GBV are happy for us to take time after Christmas to act on those that UAT feedback, then I don't mind how, that we take more time to get that UAT feedback. What it puts at risk essentially is, can we act on that feedback in time for Trillium release? And do we have that's basically the bottom line. So in terms of like waiting for feedback, I'm very happy to wait, Felix, and appreciate that everybody has a lot on. The longer we leave that before making any adjustments, the less likely there is to be fixes in Trillium, which doesn't stop us fixing it for Umbrella Leaf or whatever, if time is available. So I think Martina and I probably need to discuss that a bit more. I did message Martina yesterday, as I realized we were coming right to the end of that time period. But I don't think she's had a chance to discuss that yet. So yeah, for the moment, I'll leave the UAT open, and maybe once Martina and I have worked out what we want to do, we can announce a new end date for that. Okay. So, any questions about any of the development stuff? Right, in which case we can move on to looking at the perpetual access work. So the first thing I want to do is just go back to a discussion that started at the end of the last session we had on this. And I think it was Heiko who raised this, or at least Heiko has written a comment which is essentially in the same describes the issue we were discussing. And so this the question was, if you have a situation where you have a essentially a certain period of time, say a 1 year period in an agreement where there's the evidence collection phase, and during that phase, because it's the first year, none of the titles in, say, an EBA situation, none of the titles are perpetual and they won't convert to perpetual during that first year. But then in the next phase, say next year or the next period of time, whatever the renewal period is, then you have made the selection, or the selection has been made for you based on the usage, however that agreement works, those titles become available in perpetuity. So the titles become perpetual. So you could, I think the point was that when you start the agreement, none of it's perpetual, and then it takes a certain amount of time before anything is perpetual. And I said I'd have a think about it, which I asked if it could be written into the document. This was added to the document, and I did have a think about it, and I'm interested to hear other people's thoughts. So I have kind of two. What I said at the end of last time was you could just change the perpetual status. So you could start the agreement with is perpetual, no. And then after 1 year, you could change it to is perpetual, yes, mixed. And that seems like it could work, but it does require like a change, right? You need to remember to go and do that change. Having thought about it after the call, I'm kind of, I feel like I'm not entirely sure that I feel that you would want to change at all. And I suppose that the question here is, like when I was thinking about it, that then the issue for me is that there's no really good way, and this document doesn't propose a way of showing the titles which have got perpetual access, right? So my feeling is that that agreement doesn't change. It's just that it goes from it has perpetual access for selected titles, but that number of selected titles can be zero. And that then will increase over time. I feel like at the heart of that agreement has a in perpetuity type thing. But I'm not 100% sure about that. And I could be persuaded that there are other approaches. Another approach that occurred to me was you could have a time, like dates on the is perpetual status and enter multiple perpetual statuses that have start and end dates. I feel maybe that's a bit over complex, honestly. I'm not sure that it really gains us a lot over either just changing after 1 year or manually, or actually just deciding I'll always treat this as perpetual access, but the number of titles in the first year is zero. So those were my thoughts. And I'm interested in getting more feedback. I see a couple of comments. Firstly, I'm going to just take Felix's first. Yeah, so I did suggest that as a possibility. And I guess that actually Felix's suggestion and Sarah's suggestion work in tandem here. You could decide that for each. Okay, but I think that the principle is kind of the same, which is that for each thing you acquire in perpetuity, you add as an individual agreement line. And whether that's on the same agreement or a different agreement, you could decide which works best for you. I think I'm with Sarah here, but but that would be an individual a library level decision, and you might decide that in some cases it works better one way and in some cases the other. I guess that the thing that occurred to me is like, okay, so you've described one way in which you could record the books that have actually been added to your collection. Are there other methods that people already use? Not that you can think of, but already use. And I suppose I'm specifically wondering, do these actually get added to your catalogue? Is there then an inventory record for them? But maybe there's an invent. I mean, maybe you load the whole inventory at the start of the agreement and then just change those inventory records. I wondered what were the other things going on here? Were there any other things going on? Or are they just managed in the knowledge base like Margaret suggests here, a custom package in HLM?
Sarah is raising her hand.
Oh, sorry, Sarah. I'm not seeing the participants at the moment.
Oh,
Go
that's
ahead.
okay. So I guess I'm also thinking of it akin to how I set up the order, right? So I have an order with order lines, and if I have my POL as a package POL, then I can have the package be the thing, right? The whole thing.
Yeah.
And then I can have my EBA titles as my package titles, Right? I don't have to include all of them. I can just include the ones to which we then have perpetual access. And then there is a record in inventory, and that's what I'm linking as my, so that's how I was thinking of it, as having one agreement with agreement lines that indicate what the titles are. And then you can link that all through. And yes, so we, for example, don't load the package to which we the titles of a package to which we do not have perpetual access into folio inventory. We load them as a separate catalog type directly into our discover layer because we can delete them there. And only those titles to which we then have perpetual access get added to our folio inventory, which you might call the catalog. That makes sense.
So essentially all of the titles get added to discovery in some way, whether that's switching them on in knowledge base or some kind of loading process, but they all get added to the discovery layer. And you have a package order for, let's say, I don't know, ProQuest EBA or whatever it's called. And then, as you actually have stuff acquired under that, you would add those titles into the order and into inventory as packaged titles. And that obviously could be linked through to an agreement line as well. That package order could be linked to an agreement line as well, which could obviously be linked to your HLM package or a custom package or both, to represent those two aspects. Is that, I'm not sure how, you
And
might not do all of those steps, but.
not just the individual, not just the at the package level, like an HLM, it can also be at the title level, right? So I can indicate the titles. I can say this is the package and have an AGL for that. And then I can say an AGL for this title because I have perpetual access, making that distinction. And the same thing is done with the on the order side, which then is also reflected in how you handle things in inventory. And just to note, I would say that the only reason why all the records that you have access to but do not have perpetual access to are not in folio inventory is because currently folio, you just can't manage a 250,000 title package where things come and go in folio yet. I
Is
say yet with great hope.
so, I mean,
In
I'm
our
probably getting
previous
distracted.
system, they got loaded into our system.
I feel I'm at risk of getting distracted by non-relevant questions, but I can't resist asking, what would be the advantage of having them loaded into folio inventory?
How they get surfaced.
In the discovery layer or to
Yes.
staff.
No, in the discovery layer.
Just looking at some comments. Felix explains why he'd go for a different one because there could be a different license. One current license for what this gene license only applies to the large EBA catalog, not the titles you acquired 5 years ago. You can't have a license on AGR line level. And Felix, does that suggest that you would actually have a separate agreement per year of acquisition under the same EBA?
Yeah, as I wrote in a comment earlier, we've canceled our EBA stuff here. So I can only speak for historic things. But yeah, so once the license changes and you have an amendment, you can say this license or this amendment applies to an agreement or does it does not. But let's say, and that's That depends on the licensing details of your vendor or content provider or sometimes even supplier. So it's really a decision you have to make for each of your EBA agreements. But let's say something changes, but only from the time being you've signed the new contract and not for your stuff that you've bought, I don't know, 5 years ago. Then it's quite complicated, and that's not just EBA. It's not just an EBA problem. It's a problem with running licenses that you have for quite some time. So like consortia licenses or even normal licenses. And that's if you want to have it that everything is machine readable, then you have to go with many agreements. So that's what we are doing here, basically. If necessary, because of course you can work with comments and note fields, and you can say yes mixed for perpetual stuff. But then it's you can't process it automatically, so you always have to go in and see, okay, what where are my buckets? So one bucket with no PCA, the other one has PCA. So it's complicated. But it's also complicated going with multiple agreements because
It gives you more to manage. And Sarah and Margaret, just a question for you. If you're doing this on the same agreement, would you treat this as just an agreement with perpetual access from day one? Or would it be important to you to reflect there was no perpetual access granted under that agreement until you had at least one perpetual access title in it?
I probably wouldn't update the agreement. I probably would put no perpetual access information on the agreement until we'd selected our titles. I think that's probably how I'd run it. I think so. We have. I'm actually currently dealing with this right now. We have an EBA that wrapped up in June for Institute of Physics, and I think that in the knowledge base, I ended up selecting. Like there was a package that matched our title list, and so I think I might even just deselect the titles we did not opt to purchase, like in that package, and make a note about that. But and then at that point, I would mark it perpetual. It sort of depends on what the acquisitions team decides to do with the POL. Like we put down a deposit, so they initially had a there was initially a POL associated with it, and I'm not sure whether. Scott's going to use the same POL, but I will see. But I think my plan right now is not market as nothing until I know that it's perpetual.
And
I'm
Sarah, what's your
much lazier, so I would market perpetual right from the
so
beginning, anticipating that we will have these perpetual titles that I'm going to link there. Like if I was going to do what Alex Felix is doing, then of course the general EBA program package would be not perpetual, and then just I would create a new second agreement for the then chosen EBAs, and then those would be perpetual. But I would do that. I just don't have time always to go back. So I would, if I'm saying this is going to be this one where I'm going to do this mix thing, then I would just do it from the beginning. And having yes mix would be fabulous then, because it would be this like flag, oh, so that there's something different going on there.
Okay, I'm going to ask Heiko. I see the comment from Becca in the chat, so thanks for that, Becca. Heiko, like given those answers, do you feel like that's a reasonable that one of those approaches would be reasonable for you? Or do you still feel uncomfortable?
No, for sure. All solid approaches, all can be gone.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you guys.
I think that the I think there's an interesting point here, which had not occurred to me really until we just had this discussion, but it comes on to the next set of things I want to discuss, which is, I think it feels like the way I've thought about this field, this is perpetual field, is sort of more that can this agreement grant perpetual access? And I think that, for instance, the way that Margaret described using it, and maybe others, it and maybe high, at the heart of Heiko's question originally, is thinking about this as, does this agreement currently grant perpetual access? And I think those are, it's a really subtle distinction. And the reason I suppose I think about it as the former is that even with something like post-cancellation access, I suppose that, it's possible that we've approached this slightly from the wrong angle, and we should be thinking about what I've termed mechanism, and we'll get onto that term in a minute. But what I've termed mechanism first, and the question about whether anything within the agreement is actually perpetual as a secondary thing. Whereas at the moment, the way this is framed is that it kind of, you have, like, is perpetual is your, you have to say that it is somehow perpetual for, to set up the mechanism. And maybe that's the wrong way around. I'm not sure. Let's talk about the mechanisms, and let's start with the first question, which both Sarah and Felix raised, which is, so we've said perpetual access mechanism, and I suppose I was thinking the mechanic by which perpetual access is granted under this agreement. And this obviously isn't intuitive to people. What I think, Felix suggests type, and I think Sarah's comment is essentially the way she would term it is either type or basis. I think I prefer basis. That's more what I was trying to get at with mechanism, but I'm interested to hear what other people think, or for Felix and Sarah to expand a bit on their preferences. What do we call these things? Are these agreement types, actually? You know, going back to this question about, like, what are we approaching this from the right angle? Is this like, I think that in acquisitions, like, for instance, outright purchase is described as a, well, I don't know, it's not quite, is it? Acquisition method? No, not quite. I'm not sure there is an equivalent. So Felix says basis is okay with him. Are there any other views on this? Like, when we have this list of things, how do you think, forget perpetual access, forget the screenshots that I've put up, the designs that we've worked with. What would you, if you were going to just add this field to an agreement, property to an agreement, what would you call it?
Maybe something like ownership model.
Ownership model, right?
I don't know, because like it is a bunch of separate but extremely related concepts.
I have to say I have a problem with the word ownership in the context of
E-resources.
Yes, I was just to phrase that.
You could also call it like access model, maybe. Maybe that's a better way to frame it. And then I think if I saw this list as a drop down, if I was confused about the name of the clump of them, seeing what was in the list would clarify it for me. So I don't think we have to have like the most perfect name for this, especially if you include the not just abbreviations, but spelling it all out.
Any other thoughts on?
Lost the chat. There it is. Any other thoughts on this terminology? Okay. Thanks, okay. So my first question is whether this is like whether it's this is something you want to record. I'm not hearing anybody say that's not the case, but does anybody want to say, not necessarily it's not something you want to record, but that you like it's back to this thing. I'm now in a slightly two minds about whether this should be quite so interlinked to the idea of the perpetual access, yes, no other type thing or not.
I
Thanks,
definitely want
Margaret.
to record this somewhere. Like I record
Yeah.
it. It's part, I built
Yes.
this into my agreement name.
And do you like? Here we propose that essentially you only get to say what you only get to choose one of these if you have said there is some kind of perpetual access. So if you say there's no perpetual access, you or it's unknown, you don't get to record this information. If it's yes or some flavor of yes, whatever we agree is the list of there is some kind of perpetual access, then you get to record it. Is that we've kind of in this proposal linked those two very firmly together because I guess I was thinking that these were all ways in which you could get perpetual access to things. Is that like have I got that right or it? Would it be safer to separate these out? Does anybody want to speak explicitly in favor of having these as separately recordable things? Okay. Okay, so it seems like we have kind of probably taken the right approach here. I see the comments from Philip and Becca. The access model is like might be important even when there are zero titles that are currently under that agreement. And I mean, my instinct is that that's fine. Like I think obviously I think it was Margaret described earlier and she's had to leave, but not putting anything in until she had some perpetual access. And that kind of goes against what Philip and Becca are saying here. And I think what Sarah is saying as well, like just record it from the start. Like this is a DDA. But maybe I might wonder if we need to reverse the way these rely on each other, and maybe you say this bit up front. I'm not sure. I'll have a think about that. So I do want to get on to the question about what are the right values here. The proposal that we're putting here is that you can't extend this list. So why would I say you can't extend this list? like it locally, it would have to be a community decision, and we'd have to add it into the software. The reason why I've said that is I think this is the place where it's most likely somebody that as a community we would later decide we wanted to base some kind of functionality on this. So that somebody will come and say, could we make it so that any agreement that is recorded as EBA works in this way or has an EBA workflow associated with it that allows you to do the addition of the titles purchased on EBA or allows you to do EBA analysis like usage data. Now, some of that might feel a little far off, and it maybe it is. But I could certainly imagine somebody saying, I'd really like post-cancellation access things need to work in a different way. I'd like a workflow that allows me to do certain things with that. EBA works in a different way. And if we let you do whatever you want in this list, which is not a hard thing for us to do, then we can never base future functionality on this list because you can all do have done completely different things with this list. We'd have no way of limiting that. If we constrain it to just these things like that we agree and get this list as good as we can right now, and you know, in future releases, it doesn't stop us adding to the list in future releases, but it does mean you can't just add to it on the fly. Then obviously, then we know what's in the list and we can have a discussion about, okay, if you've recorded this as an EBA agreement, we want to add this functionality and therefore we know what the EBA value is. So we know what we're doing is saying all agreements that fulfill this criteria of having EBA in a perpetual access mechanism or basis will behave in this way in the future or will have this workflow as an option in the future. So that's why I'm very happy to hear feedback that says, honestly, Owen, that kind of eventual kind of optimization seems so far off that please just give us the flexibility right now. Or to say, actually, there are five more things that ought to be in this list. Can we get them added now? I get where you're going. So, in the second question here, Sarah has responded to say she feels that streaming video-related terms are missing. And my thought was that streaming video would be either essentially an EBA model or a PDA model. I did go back and look at conversations we had about streaming video, but it's quite a long time since we discussed streaming video, and maybe things have changed since then. Or maybe it's just a terminology thing. So the models that I was seeing was essentially if there were a certain number of streams in a certain amount of time, then that thing got added to your license as perpetual or as purchased. And that for me is PDA, right? In the broadest sense at least, it is a patron action leading to the acquisition. Or it's EBA, maybe you could say. I think EBA usually the library gets the final call, whereas patron driven, they don't, is my would be my differentiation there. But I'm very happy to add extra terms to cover streaming video type uses if you feel they are sufficiently different or there are new ones. I'm not sure I quite understand, Sarah, your what you're describing here. So maybe that's a good place to start.
So I'm actually thinking more about titles that are not part of some kind of package. So we're having to buy more and more titles directly from the directors. And They give us a file, and sometimes it is the individual titles are hosted on a platform that already pre-exists, and then that might be described as like perpetual access because that's how the platform describes it. And in other cases, it's the actual file, and we have to then accommodate the kind of the hosting of it, and that is then usually deemed life of file, and there's different contractual things related to usually both of those, because like I said, in the one case, it's sometimes also connected to what the platform that they're kind of connected with more generally also has as terms, whereas the other is with the life of file, where we get the file can be very different. And so I'm just those are not DDAs, they're not EBAs, because they're not part of some kind of package. And just to use the term outright purchase seems too limited. Like that seems very much ebooky to me, and not differentiating this new Wild West of streaming video. Let's put it that way.
So I mean, the thing that, as you were talking, I thought, well, that sounds a bit like an outright purchase, but I did want to ask, like, so in those cases. So you've described two models. Let's talk about the hosted model first, where it's provided on a platform. Is that one upfront payment for the video, the rights to the video, and then an ongoing platform payment to access all of your content on that platform? Is that typical?
It can be it can be that, or sometimes they are just on, they deliver it via some platform and you're not actually also paying, but we definitely have things where we can then get it through like Avon, and so we're also paying for Avon separately in a way, and then there's this other kind of, I don't know, section of it or something where then we can get access to these ones that we've purchased outright. But the purchase outright is just like there's so many variables with that which are just so different from the ebook thing. And so
Can you give me an example?
where we can show it, to whom we can show it, how we can show it, whether we can advertise to show it, whether we have to put it like like that, right? Can we only put it, can it only be used in the classroom for the class, and it's behind, it's really restricted in that way, or can we show it on campus at an event, like there's this educational something something license. I would have to find an example now, right?
No, I get you
That
what you
is
mean.
different from other things. The whole thing with captions is a big deal too, whether we can put some kind of thing on it and creates captions, or if that's not allowed, there's just, it's
So,
like Bounce seems to also, I can see him. And you said earlier you couldn't see who had their hand up, but Bounce has had up
yes.
his hand.
Bernd, you go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's not just the streaming video where these complications come in. There are also so many variants for journals and ebooks for post-cancellation access and things you can do. But I'm actually wondering, even if you had a fixed list and could make some workflow based on that, if we ever could agree on a workflow. So I'm wondering if that takes away the flexibility for creating your own values, if that's really worth it.
But it seems to me, and I think you say this in a comment, Sarah, like this is why we also have the perpetuity conditions. I mean, some of what you're describing feels very much like license terms to me, which I get obviously if you're not using the licenses module, you might be looking at how else could I do this? But like that you can only show it in a classroom or that it can only be distributed as part of a course pack or that you're not allowed to make copies from it or whatever it is for whatever material it is. That seems very much like a license term to me. But we also have the perpetuity conditions in this proposal, which seem to me to be where, and that is not a limited list. That is, you can put in whatever you want there. Tenant, that's tenant definable. And so the, I would have thought that, and I think that there's obviously you're uncomfortable with the idea that this is an outright purchase, and I'm very happy that we look for another term to go alongside that or instead of it. But
Can I give a different example maybe that is
yeah.
helpful? Because I get why you're saying, okay, those like detaily weedy things that I was describing really are those other things. I agree, right? They're license terms. I guess it's more like, so outright purchase. So we have many, many outright purchases of ebooks on the ProQuest ebook central platform. Right. And now they are no longer going to do individual purchases next year or whenever it is now. And, but they have nevertheless said they are committed to anything we have purchased or any of us have purchased on their platform previously, prior to that, that will be there in perpetual access. Right. So that's that outright type of purchase. That feels really, really different to me than an outright purchase of a streaming video where we are basically responsible for that file. Like they hand it off to us. So life of file feels different, and it's still an outright purchase, but that feels different to me. And that is the like the slight difference that I'm talking about, like who indicating this responsibility of the perpetual access, like, or even like way back, Gail used to send you hard drives, right? And you had them in your closet, right? That was the perpetual access that they were promising you. Well, you were responsible for those hard drives. I have no idea where they are, but they could have also degraded, right? Like you would have been responsible for that. So that is very, very different to me. And that has nothing to do with license, like what the other stuff I was describing.
But it could change for ProQuest. I wouldn't count on this being always the case that they will provide the perpetual access because there are already some providers that have indicated that they will provide the access through their platform. So yeah, these rules can change. And of
Of
course,
course, all of them can change. Everybody can de-promise, right?
but also I guess I definitely get what you're saying, Sarah, that there's a difference here. But I guess that, okay, so where you are given the file, like the you do you still regard that as perpetual access? Would you call that a kind of perpetual access?
Yes, because you're allowed to host these files yourself once the publisher doesn't provide any more hosting. That's usually in the contract. And there are
And
some publishers where you get these files up front, always if you purchase something. And there's always the case where you have asked for the files or where they would deliver them once they cease to provide their own platform for access. By the way, I have some of these hard drives in my drawer, so
And Sarah, you say, what was your, what would you say to that question?
Say the question again. Now my thought just
Do you still regard that as a perpetual access? Like, would you record that as perpetual access?
I would, because of the fact that for example, we don't have to repurchase it every semester, or we're not going to, like, if 2 semesters later, or 2 years later, the professor does the course again, and we can, that file is still available to make available for their course, right? Like, we
Yeah.
have that access continuously. We've paid for it. We just
So,
can't put it out to the world, or
okay.
not the
So,
world, but.
what I think strikes me here, and I, that there's still, I think, in my mind, some discussion to have about the list of values that we've presented here, but that it sounds to me like we, that ideally we would have some more fine-grained information here, that because I think that this maybe mechanism here has led like is too ambiguous. But if we say this is the basis of perpetual access, like this is the way the agreement works in terms of how do you get perpetual access as a result of this agreement. But then there's the detail of like, how is that perpetual access? How do you continue to access material under that perpetual access idea? So that question about whether you have got the file or you get access on a platform, or it's a combination that you get the file and the platform, and the file only can only be used if you cease to, if the platform ceases, or there's some kind of payment, or it's on an existing platform, or you know, there's a whole range of things there that seem to me to be in a bucket of like, okay, we get perpetual access. It was granted to us because it's a DDA agreement, or because it's one where we just pay a fee. Which I guess is what I meant by outright purchase. It's not related to any kind of usage or, I mean, yeah, it's not a great phrase. I'm not sure. It's what I'd want to stick with. But there's a more direct payment, and it's not part of an EBA or DDA or anything like that. But then there's the separate question of like, okay, given that I have bought this somehow, what do I actually get? You know, what am I actually getting for this purchase? You know, no matter how that's been, or this access, no matter how that's been given to me. And it feels like we're missing a set of information there that we don't have somewhere. And I see Philip has mentioned locks and this. Yeah, this also occurred to me as you were talking, like another way of granting perpetual access. Yeah, and Portico. Okay, I think I need to take that away because my instinct is those are mechanisms for accessing material or for preserving material. Way in a way that you can access it versus the nature of the agreement. So that's, you know, and you could have a PCA agreement that worked by the publisher continuing to give you access. You could have a PCA agreement that where it was only used articles under locks or something, or it was in Portico, and it kind of feels like those are things we might have to dig into a bit further to be able to record those? Because I feel that's not the same thing. It's a different thing, but it is obviously important. Okay, we have taken the hour. I obviously need to give some thought to this feedback. I suspect we still aren't done with this. I think there's still some more. I'm just wondering about the most constructive next steps, whether the next steps is for Jill and I to do some more design work and bring back some changes to designs, or whether we can still have a useful discussion based on the current designs.
Oh, and if
But
I think what's really important is that we look forward to into the future and acknowledge that we cannot just be thinking about e-journals and e-books, and that there's other formats, and that streaming video or streaming audio, different things like that, are going to become more important, and that we should figure out how to represent, like at least have the door a crack open to then be able to widen it, because there it just it is really we it's just like elsewhere in Folio, where we thought just about monographs, and then now anything that's serial or periodical is just so torturous to work with. And you know, orders is so one time oriented, and it just becomes really problematic then to expand in these areas and to build out in these areas where, and that's again, you know, my mantra of I need help with the difficult stuff.
I mean, I completely would want to put us in a position where we can do that. This question about whether this should be an extendable list, like this discussion has both made me think maybe it should be extendable for the reasons that you and Bernd have put forward, but also made me nervous about it because some of the discussion has suggested that the values you might add to this list for me are materially different to the things that I've listed here. And that if we don't give you somewhere else to do that other work, this list just becomes a very long list in lots of different tenants in lots of different ways. And that makes it difficult for us to then base any future development work on this mechanism, which I definitely see as another place I want to make sure we can do in the future. You know, I think that managing that perpetual access is something that is a hard job and becomes harder over time. Like it's going to get worse and worse and worse, right? The longer these agreements exist. And I'm, yeah. So that's where I am at the moment. I see the comment from Becca. That is a big issue. And freebies, and you have this free for 1 year, and you know, all kinds of stuff. Okay, it's 3 minutes past. We should stop. I'm sure people have already left. We will definitely come back to this. I need to think about the next steps. And we also need to make sure that we're proposing things that we can do in a reasonable time frame, without getting stuck into the never-ending. Okay, thanks all. I see the comment from Philip, just to say I've seen that comment. And
Thank you,
to
Owen.
speak to you all. Have a great Christmas, everyone, if I don't speak to you before Christmas, and
Yeah,
see you
have
in the
the
new
best of
year.
times. See you in the new year. Enjoy.
Yeah, good
Bye.
watch.
Thank you all.
Good watch.